Okay, so the date is Monday, October 29th, 2001. This is an interview with Vicki Coe at the Center for Southwest Studies, and she's being interviewed by Whitney Fletcher Howe. Okay, so can you start by telling us what's the role of the Durango Latino Education Coalition, and what's your role within it?
Okay, the role of the coalition is, I think it has three roles, and I'm just going to take that from its mission statement. The main role is to help kids be successful in school. And we really mean the public school system. And of course, our emphasis is minority kids, but our programs are open to all kids.
Great.
The second part of our mission is to promote Latino culture throughout the community, or to give the gifts of our culture to the entire community. And the third part of our mission is to combat bias, any type of bias against any group.
Great. And so specifically, you work on all of these aspects?
And mm-hmm. Right, and I'm just the secretary of the board of directors of the organization.
Okay. So do you have a lot of interaction with the students that way? Does it tend to be pretty hands-on?
The board is very much a working board. We're still sort of in the founding board mode, where we kind of do programs fairly hands-on.
Great. Mm-hmm. So what might some of those activities be that are more specific? I mean,
the activities
that meet the
okay
your roles.
Okay. The activities, the first activity and the founding activity is called Los Amigos Tutoring Program, and that's just an after-school tutoring and recreation program for K through middle school. And it's a 2-day-a-week thing. And in the summer, it becomes a recreation program where we take kids places where usually only rich people or tourists go, such as Purgatory and,
great,
you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Or up into the mountains where they might never have been before.
And that's still Los Amigos in the
That's
summer?
Still Los Amigos.
Yeah.
Well, we call it Los Amigos, but it's not. It's a sort of a different mode. It's more recreation than tutoring.
Right, but it's still called Los
Amigos. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just our summer branch.
Great.
Then we sponsor what we call the Youth Organized Unity Center at Durango High School, called the Youth Center. And that's a, by the way, let's back up. That first project, the tutoring program, that's really a cooperative program with Fort Lewis, because they supply the tutors and a lot of technical help. Okay, the next program, the Youth Organized Unity Center Durango High School, that's a project of DLEC with 9R School District and with Fort Lewis also, because they also give us help.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a multicultural center for students in which we give academic support. And it's open full time. And we run programs there such as, well, we call it the Prejudice Elimination Action Team, or the PEAT team. And that's a group of students we work with to combat bias among their peers. And that's a program that we run according to the curriculum of the Anti-Defamation League. Have you heard of the Anti-Defamation League? The Anti-Defamation League was formed in the early part of the 20th century. Its initial mission was to combat anti-Semitism. But now it's a civil rights organization that fights all types of bias, and they have a curriculum for teaching high school kids how to deal with issues of bias and prejudice.
So that's a national program?
It's a national program.
Great.
So we have a team at our high school that we sponsor specifically to deal with bias there. And we also have a program at the high school called Journey Through Our Heritage, which is Chicano and American Indian Studies, because they don't really teach that at the high school. So we sponsor our own little Chicano American Indian Studies program. And that's a statewide program. It's an academic competition, just like you've probably heard of Knowledge Bowl or Academic Decathlon. You know, it's just like that, only it's American Indian and Hispanic Studies.
So it's like a team.
It's a team.
Great.
And they compete statewide. And that's a cooperative effort with Metro State College in Denver. And other programs are our dance group. We have a folklorico dance group for all ages.
Right.
That's obviously, you know, positive activity for youth and promote our culture.
Right.
And then we have the Cinco de Mayo celebration, which is strictly a cultural thing. and other little things, but those are the main ones.
Right, that's a lot of.
Yeah, we got a mural project too, but that's kind of minor compared to everything else.
So, I'm wondering, considering Journey Through Our Heritage is sort of designed to take the place of what's not happening in the high schools, can you talk a little bit about maybe how some of the issues with Latino education in our schools or
Okay.
any issues that you see, including discrimination or prejudice or including lack of appropriate
okay.
stuff?
Okay, we'll start out with lack of appropriate stuff.
Okay.
Well, the high school is a typical high school curriculum, and it's designed to meet the standards, you know, the Colorado standards. So it's very focused on the Eurocentric curriculum. And we just feel there's room that the standards can be met with also through a broader curriculum that would include more about the cultures which live here. That's just really what's absent. You know, you'll still find very old-fashioned teaching in the schools about our founding fathers were, you know, and then it's all about the 13 colonies. Well,
right.
Our kids' as founding fathers weren't part of those 13 colonies. So there's still those kinds of things going on. You know, and really what we're doing with Journey Through Our Heritage is trying to meet our kids' needs right now today. I mean, we really understand that gross systemic change is needed, but we also understand we're not capable of creating systemic change, so we're just doing what we can do to help our kids today. You know, it's not like we're naive in thinking because the system needs total changing, radical changes. Well, no, we're not radical changes. We're just trying to have positive relationships with our young people and positive relationships with our schools so we can graduate from high school. It's that simple.
Right.
But I'd like to talk about now what issues of prejudice and bias in the school. And let me start by saying that several years ago, Durango Latino Education Coalition thought we could collect data on issues of discrimination and that we could do something about it. And so we consulted a lawyer and made up this form, how to report issues of bias. Well, that didn't work. As many times as we've gone to the community and asked them to state when they felt they were the victim of bias, no one's ever been willing to fill out this little piece of paper that was designed by the lawyer. However, the students are still very willing to tell us anecdotes or tell us what happens to them. And I guess my interpretation of what's going on is that it's just too scary or too hard, or it takes a lot of training before you'd know how to really say you had a claim for discrimination. That's a real tough standard. And we don't know how to do that. We don't know how to make that step. But I could tell you some of the stories that kids have told me. And so I think what we're dealing with is, I guess what I would call, or what the Anti-Defamation League calls, the dynamics of oppression. In other words, all the little things that happen that put you in your place, that let you know the expectations for you are less than the expectations for others, or that tell you you're in a class of people that's different from the majority. And so I'll just tell you those stories now, if I may.
Excellent, that's okay.
Okay. And they're all things that that the kids told me directly, so I'm not going to tell you third-hand and fourth-hand stories. So, and the first is, back when we started in 1995, there was a student at the high school named Carla Gomez, and she went home to her dad and said, gosh, all my friends have dropped out of school. And really, that really was the beginning of our organization. But she told this one particular story about a teacher saying to her, "Oh, gee, Carla, I expect to see you pregnant and dropping out." Yeah, a teacher said that directly to her, and Carla related that to us. And
this is in Durango?
Yeah, Durango High School, 1995. And we realized, of course we always knew it, that our kids hear stuff like that. Well, you know, Carla Gomez is a Fort Lewis graduate now, working as a teacher, and she was always a good student. And the teacher thought it was, the teacher liked Carla. The teacher thought it was funny. But it wasn't funny to Carla. It really hurt Carla, and it hurts me. It's shocking to me to hear it. I retell the story all the time, and it always kind of sets me back. Like,
absolutely.
Because we all know the role of expectations in young people's life.
Right.
That's common knowledge of brain development, right? So that's one thing. Then what happened to me about 3 years ago, I remember I was taking some of our Los Amigos students in the summer program. We took them out to Durango Nature Studies because we're always trying to get them involved in, you know, stuff that richer kids do. And so as part of Los Amigos summer program, we were driving our kids out to Durango Nature Studies because they had a youth program. And I'll probably cry when I tell you this because this really bothers me. One day when I picked up the kids, and they were lovely kids and they were being successful in the program, I picked them up and the one little boy said to me, "We're probably the dumbest kids here." Oh, and that just hurt me so bad. But what hurts me most is, at that time, I didn't know how to say to him. You know, I was shocked. I was hurt and I was shocked. Because I knew no one had told him that day. But I knew that didn't come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. That he had heard that. Somehow he had gotten that message. Maybe a year ago, or maybe at school a lot, or maybe there, but I didn't think so. I didn't know. And I should have just sat down right at his level and said, "That's not true. You're not one of the dumbest kids here. You're as smart as any of the kids here." But I was so shocked, I just picked up the kids and took them home. And so that was, you know, a real shortcoming of mine that I hope I don't make that mistake again. So anyway, that was a learning opportunity lost.
Well, it seems like we're just so used to internalizing things like that that we don't know how to respond.
Uh-huh, yeah. So I'll certainly respond next time.
I'm sure.
Okay, and then a couple years ago, one of our students at the high school was in Spanish class, and she lived with her Spanish-speaking grandfather. Well, you know, the Spanish of the community and the Spanish of the classroom are very different. And so she was in Spanish class, and something was happening, and she raised her hand and said, "Oh, I'll tell you how my grandpa says it." And then she said whatever it was in Spanish the way her grandpa says it. And the teacher said to her, "Well, we're not going to say it that way in this class." And that was the last time that girl went to Spanish class. She just dropped it. I think she dropped it because, well, she felt disrespected. And the language of her grandfather was disrespected. And she couldn't deal with it, and she just dropped the class. Well, the teacher didn't know to say, to value what she said rather than to disvalue what she said. That would have been a perfect opportunity to say, "Boy, wow, isn't that interesting? Spanish is different in different places, just like English is, you know?" I mean, it would be a wonderful opportunity to talk about what language really is, but instead, she dropped the class. I mean, that's hardly an issue of prejudice, yet it shows the dynamics of oppression, right? The putting down of or disrespecting a group of people.
Well, that's the whole problem, is that a lot of times it's operating on different levels, which are really subtle. And so
right,
down.
Right.
And
then there's the issue of, I had a student 2 years ago who was doing very poorly in a class, and we were working with her, and she said, "Okay, I'm gonna turn the corner now. I'm going to do better. I'm going to bring that grade up." And she went to her teacher and said, "I'm going to make it up. I'm going to bring this grade up. I'm going to pass this class." And the teacher said, "Well, to do that, you'd have to make A's the rest of the semester, and I don't think you can do that." I was so hurt when the student told me this. How I wish the teacher would have said, "I'll help you.
Yeah.
I'll help you make up your work you can do it, but basically the teacher told her she couldn't do it.
Well,
that's how it goes. So that's just part of the dynamics of oppression. Then?
Okay, so can I just ask one question about that? Uh-huh. So in that kind of an instance, do you guys approach teachers, or do you...
Yeah, we do now. We do now. That's what the youth organization, that's what the youth center does at the high school.
Okay.
So the person who works there is trained, and it's part of her job to go to those teachers and tell them what happened and try to work it out between the student and the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So the next example I'll give you is how we are doing that now.
Okay.
I'm going to skip an example. I'll come back to it so that I can get to how we've changed.
Okay.
Okay. This month, the high school had a Mexican flag stolen. They had a bunch of flags hanging somewhere for a display. I don't know exactly where in the high school. And many of them have been stolen, but the first flag to be stolen was the Mexican flag.
Okay.
A teacher said to one of the students who's an immigrant from Mexico, "Do you know where that flag's at?" And he said no. And then she said to the class, "I know that someone in this class stole that flag." And the teacher said to this one particular boy, "I saw you with a Mexican flag." And the student said, "I'm Mexican. I have 5 Mexican flags. We all of us from Mexico have a lot of Mexican flags." So she had made an assumption that he knew something about the theft and had approached him and said, "You know, where's the flag? And I know you took the flag, and I saw you." So he felt racially profiled.
Yeah.
And so he went to the youth center and reported that. And the person who's working there went to the teacher then and said, "I just want to tell you that the student feels singled out and accused of stealing because he's Mexican. And he didn't steal the flag."
Mm-hmm.
So that's what she does now. Every time something comes up,
right,
she has to go to the teacher and just tell them.
And that's the youth center?
Yeah.
Okay.
And by the way, the youth center teacher is being paid through a grant that, and the school district is the fiscal agent for that grant. I mean, they got the grant, and it's in partnership with Durango Latino Education Coalition, but I must say, we're not paying that teacher's salary, the grant is, and it's the school district who got that grant. Of course, at our, with our cooperation and insistence, really. Our challenge now is to sustain that program. That's,
yeah,
a whole other topic.
Uh-huh.
More stories. I'm just looking for, I got my stories written down here. Okay, now the next story is that at Escalante Middle School, I think this was last year. Oh, let me tell you what's going on at the high school right now. Right now at the high school, there's a lot of green card jokes, which hurts our kids a lot. And I think it was just last week, two students of Mexican heritage were walking down the hall with the teacher, who's young and of Mexican-American descent. And a teacher at the high school said to them as they were walking down the hall, "Are you related?" And I mean, that's such an innocent comment, "Are you related?" But I mean, imagine if we said to the Anglo kids who walked in, "Are you related?" It would seem kind of strange. It struck the kids as strange. It's just a way to let them know that they're different and they stand out and they all look alike, right?
Absolutely.
It's funny, but it's not. But another story is that last year at Escalante Middle School, our little Chicano kids were cutting up green paper and making little fake green cards and handing them out to the immigrant kids. So we need to remember that these instances of oppression and putting people down and bias aren't just problems between communities of different color. They're problems within communities. They're a problem within the Latino community is the problem between the Hispanic American of many generations' descent in this area and the new immigrants. that's a problem of bias and hurting one another with stupid things like giving out green cards to the immigrant kids by the other Chicano kids.
I'm sorry,
I shouldn't have said Chicano. I should have said the Hispanic American children of long descent in this country. We're giving the new immigrants little green cards to insult them.
Right.
Uh-huh. To put them in their place. Let them know you're the newcomer.
Oh, no.
So we have to deal with issues of prejudice and bias within our community as well as between our community and the dominant culture.
Right.
As well as within the dominant culture against gay and lesbian people. I mean, it's pervasive. It's normal. It's something to fight against at all levels, and so we're committed to, wherever we find it, deal with it. It doesn't just mean we're accusing Anglo people of coming down against brown people. No.
Right.
This is...
It's on all levels.
It's at all levels, and we're going to work against it at all levels.
So, do you find that you have an equal amount of problems to tackle between these two communities?
Mm-hmm. Right. The local community here, who are Latinos or Chicanos or Hispanos or Hispanic or Spanish, is not one community.
Right.
It's many different communities, and issues of bias don't belong to one group. They're all over the place.
Right. Makes it extra difficult, I think, to tackle some of the problems when there's not a lot of unity, and but yet there's stereotyping from the school world, maybe.
Mm-hmm. We've worked very hard at making sure all of our programs consist of kids who are first generation Americans, or whose status we don't know. And kids who are Hispanic Americans of long descent here. We work very hard at making sure we actively recruit and get those kids in our programs. And we make sure that they make friends and don't pick on each other. And in fact, our prejudice elimination action team at the high school is doing a wonderful job. It's immigrant kids and kids who've been here a long time. And they're good friends, and they're working together now, and they're fighting issues of bias together.
Excellent.
And our dance group is everybody together. Mm-hmm. So that's the one thing we can be sure we're successful.
Do you have in the PEAT, do you have maybe Anglo kids or Native American kids or?
Yeah, we have Native American kids for sure. Absolutely Native American kids. And right now in PEAT, I think we only have two Anglo kids. It's a 15 student team, and only two are Anglo. You know, we wanted, it wasn't our intention that the PEAT team would be all students of color, but we just weren't successful at recruiting Anglo kids, and we only got two. And that's a problem. We need to get more Anglo kids. Now, these students will be going out and doing workshops for their peers, and we hope that they'll generate more enthusiasm and that every year we recruit more kids onto the team. That's something we have to do. We have to get some traditional leaders at the high school who might be Anglo-Americans.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too bad. It seems like fighting prejudice definitely doesn't matter what background you're from at all. I'm a little curious to know, can you talk about when there's issues of prejudice not coming from authoritative positions, not teachers discriminating against students, but student-to-student discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering how the administration or the faculty at the schools deals with it, and if you think that there's a lot of room for improvement in terms of maybe when the kids were cutting up green cards and giving them to the Mexican immigrants. How is that dealt with by...
Good question. It's my impression I don't work within the schools, mind you, I just volunteer in the schools, and I know the kids. It's my impression that the teachers don't handle it. It's my impression that the majority of teachers just let it pass and don't say anything and hear it and don't do anything. One of the ideas during Latino education had was to ask NINAR to do more in-servicing of its teachers. Using another curriculum of the Anti-Defamation League, which is designed to train teachers to deal with these issues. And we've failed in that attempt. So this is an area of need. I don't think it's being addressed very well. And I'm not hopeful that the school district will in-service its teachers on how to deal with these. Okay. Even with, you know, the death of the Martinez boy, the Native American boy who was also bisexual in Cortez, mm-hmm. and the work of PFLAG to try to get the safe schools idea. I don't think the schools, I'll be surprised if the school district responds to that, and certainly they haven't been able to respond to our request for teacher education. So I really don't know to what degree the public school system can respond, given the fact that really what they have to do is driven by the legislature now with standardized testing and the CSAP and this whole business of how schools are graded. Mm-hmm. That's their priority. This is not their priority. This is Durango Latino Education's priority. This is not the priority of the school district. I don't think they're going to respond. So we're going to take a different tack. In fact, we're going to try to work with the Center of Southwest Studies in Fort Lewis College and maybe pressure this institution to give graduate credit summer institutes in Hispano studies, something like that. For teachers, you know, because teachers always have to take courses to keep their license up. Even though it would be preaching to the choir, we need a good, strong choir. So I just think that the school district can't respond right now. They have too many stupid legislative testing things worrying them. So we'll try a different technique. Because we gotta teach them to have better practices in this regard.
So you think that some of the state level or even national, that's probably state level, mm-hmm. legislative issues really have a strong impact on how ethnic relations play out in our local schools because of the fact that they don't have time to work on some really
They don't have issues. Time to work. Well, it could work both ways. One, they don't have time to work on these issues. They're more distracted by other issues. On the other hand, where there are schools that are predominantly minority, mm-hmm. and they're going to be graded and have standardized testing, it remains to be seen whether these legislative issues will help them or hurt them. Mm-hmm. It may help them if that means more resources will come to them, right. as they've always, you know, schools in poor minority neighborhoods have always had the least resources. But really, it remains to be seen whether standardized testing will bring them more resources or be punitive and close them down and give the parents vouchers and fracture the neighborhood. It remains to be seen what the effect will be.
That's true. Are you done with your stories, or did you?
Yeah, I'm done with my stories.
Okay. I guess the last thing that I'd like to hear your perspective mm-hmm. on is, did you grow up in Durango?
Nope.
I imagine that you might know something still about, well, you might not know. If mm-hmm. you don't, tell mm-hmm. me you don't know. Mm-hmm. Do you know how this relates or compares to the historical position of the Latino community in Durango within the schools? Have things gotten better? Have they gotten worse?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good question. I've only been watching the data myself since 1995.
Okay.
And it's been the same since 1995, a consistent achievement gap, consistent series of anecdotes from the students about feeling unwelcome. I don't know about before then, so I can't answer your question.
Okay. Do you know anybody who might? Is there anybody from DLEC who grew up in Durango?
Yeah, Tommy Moreno grew up here,
okay.
And he's on the DLEC board. And I'll give you his phone number. Also on the DLEC board, who grew up here is Jim Montoya. He grew up here.
Oh yeah, I just interviewed him.
Oh, did you?
But not about that.
I think he grew up. His parents lived in Santa Rita. You might have interviewed him about that. And then a founding member of DLEC who's no longer with us, but who still lives in Durango, is Butch Gomez, and it was his daughter Carla. It was her comment who was kind of the origin of everything. And he was really the beginner of everything in terms of what we do. But he grew up here. He might have perspective.
Okay, great. Well, as far as, I mean, these stories are, I don't want to say they're excellent because they're terrible stories, but
yeah,
it's very helpful to put into perspective what's going on.
Yeah, you know, little things like that, that's sort of like the base of inequality, is just those little put-downs, because children internalize those things.
Absolutely.
And then there you have it. Then you've got your system.
I think internalize is really a great word to describe what sort of happens to everyone.
Of course, not all children do. I mean, some kids fight back, but a common response to put-downs is to internalize it.
I guess one little aspect that maybe we can elaborate on is you mentioned several times you try to take the kids on field trips that maybe richer kids go on. Can you talk a little bit about how socioeconomics ties into some of this? Or maybe it's just really obvious.
Well, socioeconomics part of the picture, but it isn't the entire picture. I mean, it's not true that Latino kids do less well in school just because of socioeconomics. There are other factors too.
Right.
However,
so far we've pretty much talked about
the problem of expectation.
Right. Expectation.
The culture of the school,
which tends to be maybe more ethnic-based prejudice than socioeconomics. Maybe if you can elaborate on that a little more.
Why does socioeconomics matter? I don't know, but for some reason,
Having that extra education available to you, getting to go to Durango and interested is all the time, or getting to travel and have a larger perspective on the world.
It does seem to matter. And I mean, some of the children who live in the Spanish side of town, or I guess I should say our Chicano kids, or our Latino kids, or our Spanish kids, Hispanic kids, whatever. Have never been to Purgatory. Many of them have never been to the mountains. When they get to the mountains, because they haven't been there, you know, you almost have to learn to see beauty. And you know, if you've always just been in your neighborhood and you've never seen the beauty of the mountains, it's kind of hard to see it. You almost have to learn to appreciate it.
Right, this is beautiful.
And that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. We're taking them up there and making sure they see it, and talking about the beauty, and asking them to notice.
Right. And in some ways, that probably plays into standardized testing, as far as perceiving things the way that the creators of the test perceive them.
Yeah, that's a whole nother ball of wax. I'm not an expert in that, but. And I know there are, you know, good things written about the bias of standardized testing towards the middle class, towards the dominant classes. It's just not a field that I have a lot of information about.
Okay. Well, great.
But you know, well, let me just say something else.
Great.
I always get the feeling that kids who grow up here, the majority kids who grow up here, don't know that in the last millennium, this land was Ute territory most of the time. It was New Spain for a while, and it was Mexico for a while. And it didn't become a U.S. territory until the middle of the 1800s, which is pretty recent. You know, and I just wonder, if they ask that on a standardized test, obviously, what they're going to ask is Colorado history since 18, whatever it was, and we became a state, you know.
76.
So just leaving out, we don't have to know. We don't have to know the history of the other peoples who were here. It's not going to show up on a test. Well, maybe it is. I don't know. I haven't read the test. It's interesting, in the Journey Through Our Heritage competition last year, one of the things the kids had to do was, in front of everybody, go up to the front in the competition on an overhead, and they were given a blank map, and they had to draw the borders of the Ute Reservation, draw the borders of the Navajo Reservation, things like that. Uh-huh, that's Journey Through Our Heritage. I thought that was so wonderful that the kids could do that. I was impressed.
A lot of adults can't.
I was real impressed. Yeah. And show where the four sacred mountains are. You know, these are, that's knowledge that they have.
Do you have any, do you have a lot of diversity within the board or participants or volunteers in DLEC?
Yeah, we have a lot of diversity. We have a lot of diversity. The board is 13, and we consist of Anglo-Americans, first and second generation Mexican-Americans, I should say first and generation Latino Americans, because it's not just Mexico, it's other countries in South America, as well as multi-generational Hispanic families.
Okay.
And even a guy who's Hispanic and Chinese. And we are male and female, and we are rich and poor, and that's important, because those are the, we're a coalition of people that, and so our board has to represent the people that we work with, and that's one thing we do is listen well and bring everyone on board. And of course the people who work in our programs are predominantly Anglo-American, because we use mostly Fort Lewis College tutors for our elementary programs.
And where does, you might have said this at the beginning, but where does the funding for the DLEC grants come from? Or is it grants?
We have to write grants, yeah. That's just one of those organizational problems that all nonprofits have. We're trying to find money all the time, and we're still at the stage where we're dependent on grant money, as opposed to having our own sources of income. That didn't mean we had to rush and write grants every time there's a deadline or something appears before us. So yeah, we have grants. We have grants from the Colorado Trust and various other places, and that's just a little administrative nightmare and headache that we have to go through to pay for all this.
So pretty much somebody has to just be employed on the grant money to rewrite the grants.
Yeah, but it's really the board. We do have one full-time hired person. DLEC has one full-time hired person. That's the director of programs. It'd be nice if the director of programs would just direct programs, but in fact she has to do administrative stuff also, so she's very active on grant writing, but the board is too.
Okay. Great. Well, can you think of anything that I should have asked you that's important to know?
No, thank you.
Thank you.